Welcome into this fourth episode recap of the Apple TV Plus docuseries, The Dynasty, on the 20-year dynasty run for the New England Patriots. We have covered you through episodes 1 through 8 of that docuseries. We are getting into the final two episodes on this episode here tonight, and then I believe we will be doing a separate recap of all of those episodes to talk about what we think was left out of the series and some of our favorite people from the series. And that'll be a relatively quick one, but this will be the last long episode where we break down episodes 9 and 10. So let's get right into it. To my right is the shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you?
I'm good, John. Good to be back.
Of course. And out in the great state of California, it's Mr. Matthew Kovach with us. Matt, how are you?
I remember the shark and the dog episode right before Super Bowl 52, and I just said, guys, we're going to win the game if Malcolm Butler plays well.
Oh, that is a good segue into what we're going to talk about in episode 9. I am your host, John Murphy. Let me start us off by doing what we've been doing for every episode intro, or episode breakdown intro. Episode 9, Breaking Point. Tensions reach an all-time high when Belichick makes a debatable decision on the grandest stage. So what we cover, or what Kraft Dynasty LLC covers in this episode, is they bring you through the 2017-2018 season, which ends with them losing in pretty epic fashion to the Philadelphia Eagles. Tough team to lose to. With a backup quarterback, just kind of a team of destiny, knocking off the Patriots, who had been to, you know, at that point, 3 of the last 4 Super Bowls. So people were sick of the Patriots by this point, and the Eagles just got us right where they wanted them. And it was an amazing game if you're just a sports fan, but a tough one for Patriots fans just because of what it feels like, what they left on the table there with Malcolm Butler not playing in the game and not really getting a reason why he didn't play in the game. They were saying going into this episode that there was going to be a big reveal. It still seemed like a whole lot of nothing, which we will touch on and break that down. But another thing that comes up in this episode, Dave, is the straining of the relationship between Bill and Brady, and things coming to a head with Guerrero being kicked out of the locker room and everything there. And this is really the beginning of the end. They touch on it with Garoppolo, but this is the straw that broke the camel's back, and they still find a way to win another Super Bowl. But this is the dynasty falling in this episode. They do a good job of painting that picture.
Yeah, no, it's a, you can, I think I'll start with the Super Bowl first, because John, you'll probably remember, but you know, I think after that Super Bowl, obviously, the Giants ones were brutal. You know, it was one of the worst feelings ever. But this one, in my opinion, just personally of how I felt, I couldn't control it, obviously. But I felt just as bad. It was awful because it was Tom Brady's best statistical game in the Super Bowl. He did everything he could. And then you had this whole Malcolm Butler thing. You know, if he had played, we probably would have been all right. We would have gotten at least one stop, two stops more to win the game. And it was just such a crushing defeat. It was a weird Super Bowl. I think it was in Minnesota, right? It was that kind of, you know, weird venue. You know, Brady going back to Minnesota. It was a weird Super Bowl, but I just remembered being so crushed afterwards. I mean, offense was unbelievable. Gronk was unbelievable. Amendola, Edelman, you got it all from the offense. Defense couldn't do anything. To this day, I will never, ever forgive Matt Patricia, just because he was the sole reason. One of the big reasons why we lost the game is the defense. Obviously, Malcolm Butler, too. But you can get one stop if you call yourself a top coach in the NFL. And he ended up getting a coaching job.
Matt Patricia was a guy up to that point who would kind of get talked about. And remember, it was like they got this rocket scientist or whoever. He was just kind of like, he was kind of Patriots folklore in a way. And he was around. And then he has one of the worst coaching performances ever Malcolm Butler or no Malcolm Butler, and gets a head coaching job. And then when he comes back, he's an even bigger joke. And then he goes to the Eagles this past season, and the defending NFC champions can't even get out of the first round against Baker Mayfield. So not to get off on too much of a tangent.
But no, it was just such a great game by Brady, and it was just crushing seeing, you know, Philly win that, and the ending was brutal. It was just a really tough loss, and we didn't know at the time that it was, you know, there were murmurs, you know, what's the plan with Brady, what's going on, and then all this stuff kind of starts coming out with Guerrero, and they go into it in the episode with, you know, Bill has always stuck to his core. This will be my final point before I throw it to Cole, but Bill always stuck to his core value, which is team first. Comes down to the last water boy to Tom Brady. And, you know, he was not offended, but I mean, definitely offended the fact that, you know, you had this whole training staff, full-time employees that were, you know, doing for the most part a good job, you know, training the team. And Brady has his Guerrero, who, you know, was kind of just this healer in a way. It was like Brady's shaman who did everything and was kind of coming in the team, and Belichick didn't like that. And that kind of goes back to his core values that, like, this is a team. He's not really a part of the team. And Brady was kind of just like, you know, this is, you know, I've done all this for, you know, 20 years and I can't bring my trainer in the locker room. And it's absurd in my opinion, but it was Belichick sticking to his core values.
You know, I kind of, going into this episode, I remember looking back on that and being like, Bill botched the the Guerrero situation. But this episode does do a good job of showing where Brady is in the wrong on this. Of like, Brady is correct in that Guerrero changed who Brady was as a player, and his you know, transformed his body and made it so he could play until he was 45 and become the greatest quarterback of all time, or cement himself as the greatest quarterback of all time with the, you know, Super Bowls he was able to get late in his career. But once Brady starts pulling guys like Gronk and Amendola and other guys into the Guerrero world, and they start denying getting on the squat rack that the, you know, training staff is trying to tell them to do, you're undermining the coach and the team at that point. And that's how things can start to crumble. And so those two were just so at odds. They did do a good job of painting where Tom is wrong in that regard, as ridiculous as Bill can be and has, you know, been in the Patriots world. Cove, let's throw it to you. We've been stealing the spotlight.
No, I love it. A couple things. Alex Guerrero gets kicked out of the Patriots locker room, and Tom Brady got introduced to Alex Guerrero by Willie McGinnis. So, you know, apropos of nothing. Mm-hmm. The story was Brady, it was 2006, I want to say, was at practice. Because Willie was gone, I think it's probably 2004, and he's at practice at the end of the season. And he said he just couldn't lift his arm, and it was so sore. And he thought, I might have to retire. And he basically said that Willie McGinnis told him to go see his guy. And Willie was such a godfather figure. You basically listened to Willie. So, you know, obviously, you know, Tom Brady said, hey, if Willie's telling me to go see his guy, I'm going to go see his guy. And the rest is history. This episode, though, was the one that was the most infuriating for me, because that's when Bob Kraft goes and says, I'm pinning this loss directly on Bill.
And it's so thankless.
And it's thankless because we talked about on the last episode, Super Bowl 49, where you have Belichick not call the timeout at the end of the game, where every single coach in the world would have called the timeout. So, you know, Bob Kraft, you have to ask yourself, what would you rather do? Have Malcolm Butler in there and you still may lose the game because Nick Foles lit you up?
Yep.
Or would you rather have your traditional tomato can coach who would have played Malcolm Butler and also called a timeout at the end of Super Bowl 49? You just can't have it both ways. You can't marvel at Mick Jagger for being an 80-year-old rock star and then call the dirty old man when he comes to your house and hits on your 25-year-old sister. It just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you can't have selective outrage and love somebody for being who they are, and then when they show you also who they are, you don't like all sides of it, though. It would be like protesting a restaurant because you love the steak but you hate the pasta. You know, you just can't have it both ways. And that's why, you know, when Kraft is saying, I pin this loss on Bill, it was just so, I think that really gives you, you know, such a window into how they viewed Belichick and really, you know, how they sort of took him for granted, that they could kind of pick and choose when they wanted him to be a mad genius and when they didn't want him to be. So it's the thing that really stuck with me the most. The other thing too, we talked about Gronk in our previous episodes. You finally got Gronk healthy to a Super Bowl. This didn't happen all the time. I mean, Rob Gronkowski for the New England Patriots played healthy in one Super Bowl 49. That's it. He was broken down and beat up in Super Bowl 53. Granted, he makes the big catch, and we'll talk about that later. But he doesn't play in the Falcons Super Bowl, and he's beaten up in Super Bowl 53. So you had healthy Gronk out there, and he was just absolutely dominant. And, you know, Zach Ertz was really good in that game. Gronk was otherworldly in that game. So there's, you know, there's, I think, that part of the frustration too. And the last note on Matt Patricia. There's a famous shot of Matt Patricia when he's getting off the plane after Super Bowl 51. Yeah, F. Goodell, you know, this, all this kind of stuff. And he gets off wearing he gets off the plane after Super Bowl 51, arrives back in Boston, wearing the Goodell Barstool clown shirt. And it was almost like, yeah, Matt, your defense got shredded by Matt Ryan out there, and you needed the offense to bail you out. You're walking around like you just pitched a shutout on Super Bowl Sunday with a Goodell FU shirt. So it was a little, that rubbed you the wrong way about Matt Patricia. But, you know, the other thing too.
Cove, let's keep it moving. We got to kick it around here. All right. So one thing that gets, that I forgot to mention is this episode starts in such a ridiculous way of, this is where, you know, we're a couple episodes in at this point of the this director kind of steering this almost like it's a Star Wars yes. movie, of just like there's heavy synthesizer parts that make it seem like, I mean, the Aaron Hernandez episode is like a murder documentary where they pin Bill as like an accomplice yeah. to the murder. It's just a wild documentary at times. And the way they started off with the Trump rally of reading the Bill Belichick letter, and it is, I will say it a million times, that this docuseries was signed off by Kraft Dynasty LLC. They do a good job of saying, you know, the Trump stuff was Belichick and it was Brady, and they skirt past the fact of, Dan Shaughnessy did a great job of mentioning this in his article, that Bob Kraft gave Donald Trump $1 million. That doesn't really get mentioned yeah. at any point in there. And we'll say it in the final episode, but Devin McCourty does have a great line in there where he's like, we got painted as like the team of Trump. And it was just because of those three guys. So he's the only one who says Tom, Bill, and Bob. He's like the only one who's able to get anything that just calls out like, we all got lumped into this. And it's just an interesting time in the NFL and interesting time in the political world. But they just make it seem like such a Star Wars-esque, like, you know, drama. It's a wild way to start the episode.
They make Bill kind of like Darth Vader at the end. Yeah. It's like, it's funny because, you know, in that episode, or, you know, as we get to the end of the dynasty of the series, you know, it's really, I don't know if you could tell, but Belichick is kind of, you know, he's given less, you know, answers. And then, you know, the director asked him the question about Malcolm Butler. He's like, he's saying Matt.
Yeah,
it's absurd. And, you know, if the whole Butler thing was Belichick's fault, you know, he would have said something and it would be news now. But there's a reason why it's been kind of trapped under a door. No one knows what happens. It's crazy. But this episode is when you can really tell it's just a pushback on Bill. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, it's kind of what the Kraft's goal was, it seems like.
I just want to touch on something from earlier. Dave said that this was like a loss that hurt so deeply. I would say this probably isn't even in my top 10 sports losses in Boston. Matt touched on it in last night's episode, the Game 6 loss to the Wizards in 2016? Dave, that was way worse. I would say Game 4 against the Warriors, Dave saw me in real time have an absolute conniption that the series was over when it got tied up 2-2 against the Warriors. Any Bruins collapse, I will say that it stunk losing to the city of Philadelphia, but the Nick Foles story is better than any Giants story. That one did not bother me the way the two Giants Super Bowls did, many Celtics playoff games, and many Bruins playoff collapses, of which we have plenty to go off of in Shark and the Dog history, no less. So, Cove, a little bit more on the Eagles Super Bowl before we get into the final episode. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple things on the Belichick Trump letter. I love when Belichick goes, "Yeah, I wrote a letter to John Kerry too." Kind of a different guy, huh? He goes, I write letters for friends. And by the way, just as a side note, one of my favorite stories about that whole thing is when Trump talks, he's at the New Hampshire rally, and he talks about the Belichick letter, and that Belichick wanted the letter back. And Trump goes, "Yeah, I figured he's going to kind of clean it up and, you know, kind of tone it down a little bit." Trump goes, "He wrote me a second letter. The second one was better." And that's Bill, though. Bill never thought twice about writing the letter, and that's how he saw things in such black and white terms. He figured that, hey, this guy's my friend, and he goes, "I'm just looking at him, you know, in a box or outside of the box, basically, and I'm going to write him a letter." And I love that he said that he wrote a letter to John Kerry, and he's written letters to other guys and such. And it was just such a profound Bill statement. I do love, though, that Devin McCourty said that, because I mean, my God, Robert Kraft talks all the time that after his wife died, one of the first people to call him and truly console him was Donald Trump. But apparently, you know, for trying to frame Bill Belichick as everything you were trying to make him out to be, I'm just saying it was so amazing how they did that to, again, paint Bill as a bad guy. And as Dan Shaughnessy said, there's no Orchids of Asia mentions at all. You know,
and no spoilers. That's our end episode.
Oh my God. Anyways, so that you know, as far as where that game ranked as an all time loss, I'm with you, John, for sure. But I think also, again, you know, you were getting so close to the end, and anybody who had any sort of understanding that this wasn't going to last forever, and that you were perilously close to the end. You know, the feeling of seeing Tom, you know, strip sacked by another Michigan guy at the end when a strip sack that was not basically by Charles Woodson kind of kicked off the dynasty, to see Tom kind of sitting on the field, you know, losing the game after a strip sack. And you thought, wow, is this the way it ends? And then, you know, you hear about the Giselle and Tom and Kraft meetings and all this kind of stuff. And it was just... It was really no pun intended, deflating. It was extremely, extremely deflating loss. But as far as a hard loss is concerned, I mean, you know, we saw, you know, what our hockey team did 5 years ago. So in a number seven at home in the hockey capital of the world, of at least the United States, you know, as we have, you know, two colleges in the Frozen Four.
Yep. So one thing that comes up in this episode is this is the first time that you're starting to see some of the players, at least in the audio or the video footage that they use, starting to go at Bill. And you hear from Devin McCourty that he got interviewed for 6 hours. They only selected so much. But I think guys like Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, Rob Gronkowski, they might have said some glowing things at other points, but they also did say the most negative things towards Bill. So this season represented so much of, like, it didn't seem like it was a ton of fun for the players. And they were all, as a collective, so pissed off about the Malcolm Butler thing. And, you know, I think they have a right to be pissed off for sure. Mostly because they didn't get an explanation, or maybe they know more than we do. But, like, there are some guys who definitely have it out for Bill, and this episode really touches on that. So I think that's all we're going to cover for episode 9. There's plenty more to talk about.
John, I have to toss this in there. Real couple quick things. Number one, when Rob Gronkowski said he's sitting in his car and he didn't want to go to work, I mean, easy, Gronk, please. I mean, there are people reporting to factory jobs that, you know, just go in there every day, kind of like Dave Chappelle's suicide skit. That's the first thing. The second thing I want to say is we forget about that AFC championship against the Jaguars, which was one of the most exhilarating wins. You talk about this loss not being a hard loss. That AFC championship game and the game-winning touchdown to Amendola was as exhilarating of a Patriots game that we saw ever. I mean, it was a phenomenal game. And here's where, you know, the entire city and fan bases got totally whacked out. For years, Bertie Carbo was a household name in Boston for hitting a pinch hit home run to tie a game in a World Series that you lost. Crazy. I mean, absolutely crazy. Bertie Carbo, household name, hitting a home run to tie a game in a World Series you lost. And we've gotten so spoiled and so rich, we just totally glossed over the fact, and it's a great story in the Benedict book, where Brady gets hurt in practice. He thinks his season is over because Rex Burkhead, you know, they collided basically, and Brady slammed his head or slammed his hand on Burkhead's helmet. Then Brady has to have this crazy surgery. And then after the game, after Brady leads the miraculous comeback, what does Belichick say? You know, it wasn't open heart surgery. It just kind of, you know, basically blows off the fact that most guys would have missed that game, including fragile, brittle Jimmy Garoppolo, who couldn't play with a shoulder separation. He would have definitely missed the game. And the best part before that AFC championship game is when Brady goes back into the locker room and he goes off into a little room by the tunnel there and has the doctor who performed the surgery cut the sutures down so he can get better grip on the ball. In any other town in America, that is a folklore story. In Boston, we just skipped over it in the episode.
It's a really good point. One other thing that has to be mentioned, Dave, with that AFC championship game is we're losing to the Jaguars. You and I run down the street to Charlestown High. I bang a 40-yard field goal. We go on an epic run and win that game. It was the two names you think of in that game, Steph Gilmore, John Murphy. Just with why we beat the Jacksonville Jaguars at home in that AFC championship game. 2 weeks later, we're losing at the half. We run down to Charlestown High again. I bang another 40-yarder, Dave, and it just wasn't enough this time. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why that loss doesn't mean as much to me, because I gave everything I could to that game, and you know, Nick Foles was just too good for us in the end. Let's switch gears right to episode 10 here. Endgame, final episode. Following a run spanning decades, the dynasty finally collapses. They seem to leave out we win a Super Bowl. So, I mean, the dynasty gets capped off pretty well. Yeah. We don't touch on the Titans season, and we'll get into that in the next brief recap episode. But what we get in this episode is a little bit more of the same, of just sky is falling, but also there's a nice little Super Bowl in here. They do give Bill a decent some props in this episode for his coaching performance in that Super Bowl. So I will say that as much as they've been painting him out to be the villain in the previous 3-4 episodes, this one does reflect on him pretty positively with what he does there. Dave, thoughts on the final episode?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a good end to the series. You know, as you mentioned, it's like, you know, they're going through that Super Bowl. What happens after with, you know, Belichick going to Kraft's house and you know, after that Super Bowl and then the next season, And I think that Super Bowl was so it was underrated. You know, it's kind of the one that's, I hate to say this, but kind of the forgotten one for Patriots fans because, you know, it wasn't super exciting. It was kind of, you know, it was the last run with this team. I loved it. Everyone on this podcast loved it, but, and it was a great game. I mean, the a lot of drama in it with, you know, the McCourty play, the Gilmore interception, the Gronk catch, Edelman getting the MVP, which he very well deserved because, especially after all those Super Bowls were so epic and obviously didn't get the MVP in those. So well-deserved. That Rams team was excellent. They kind of go through it. They were, you know, the best team offensively, defensively. And the game plan was just, you know, phenomenal, as you mentioned, John, with them giving props to Belichick. And that kind of led to Kraft being like, you know, after the Eagles Super Bowl where he was like, this is this is where I stopped kind of trusting Bill, comes right back. And, you know, it's like, Bill's such a great coach. Like, I got to make a tough decision here in the next, you know, however many years to keep Brady or Belichick. And, you know, he says it's the toughest decision he's made in his business career, whatnot. So it was a good, that part of it was really good. The Super Bowl, the ending was tough with the breakup, you know, Brady and Giselle going.
We'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that. So. In the Super Bowl, Dave, you touched on it about how much of a team effort it was. I mean, it was a special teams battle. It was a defensive battle. It was you might even lose that game if Jason McCourty doesn't get his hand in on the Brandon Cooks touchdown in the end zone. Everyone came to play in that game. So it compared to the other shootouts and comebacks we had been accustomed to, it wasn't the most exciting, but if you're a team that's been chasing a Super Bowl or a fan that's been chasing a Super Bowl for 30 years, you'd give anything to have a team's performance like that. Cove, without touching on the Super Bowl, I got to throw it to you on the AFC Championship game.
I'm certainly glad you did that because I've been waiting several episodes to say that the 2018 AFC Championship game is my favorite Patriots game of all time. And it just recently passed, and it's, you know, one of those things where you look back on it in a historical context. At the time, it did not pass it was nothing would be equal to the 2004 divisional round game against the Colts. Not too many times that the defending world champions are playing a home playoff game and they are underdogs at home against the team they had owned. That was always my favorite because that game was personal to me. That 2018 AFC Championship game is my favorite. And when you think about the arc of that team, got off to a really slow start, had some really tough losses, including to Detroit and Matt Patricia on a Sunday night. Earlier in that 2018 season, and it culminated when they went to Pittsburgh and lost. And I don't know, you know, hopefully some people remember this, but after the Pittsburgh game, the Patriots didn't open their locker room for a long time. And there's, you know, usually, you know, kind of a little bit of time for the coaches and whatnot to address guys and talk, and then there's media availability. I remember watching the post-game live with Michael Holly, and they kept going back and forth to commercial. Yeah, we're expecting Belichick, we're expecting Brady. Neither of them came up, and finally they go back to Michael Holly for a third time in the studio, and he goes, yeah, the Patriots locker room is not open. And in that moment, Belichick was in there chewing ass, and that's when he met with Josh McDaniels and goes, Josh, I know you want to sit here and throw it all over the place and do all this fancy, that's not who we are, so you better figure out what you do well and start doing it immediately. And that team ran the ball. And they ran it well, and they ran it right through San Diego. They ran it right through Kansas City. And, you know, you thought – and they didn't really run it too well in the Super Bowl at all. I mean, Sony Michel had the only touchdown. But that was just the essence of everything. And the more that I look back on that season, maybe because it was the last one, it's one of my favorite seasons for so many reasons. And the joy – that you saw with Tom after the game when he flips off his helmet and he has that look on his face like, holy shit, And just like there's another shot of Tom when he puts his arm around Dante Hightower leaving the game, like we did it. Like we absolutely did it. And one of my other favorite stories is Brady came into practice that week and he was really zinging the ball and he felt really good. And Mike Giardi had a story on this at the time. Brady goes in practice. He goes, "I'm the baddest motherfucker on the planet." And there was just something about that whole thing. And then when they got the ball in overtime and took it down and drove and scored, and it was amazing. And one other bit of context, kind of give people an understanding of how hated the Patriots were at this time. The Patriots in that AFC Championship game got the ball first in overtime and drove right down the field and won the game. And people complained for 2 weeks about how bad the NFL overtime rules were because they hated the Patriots. People loved Drew Brees and they loved the Saints. Earlier that day in the NFC Championship game, the Saints got the ball first in overtime. Drew Brees got decked, threw a pick, blew another big game, and Greg Zuerlein kicked the Rams into the Super Bowl. Nobody said anything about the overtime rules in that game where the Saints got the ball first, blew it, turned it over, and lost the game. But because people hated the Patriots so much, they were so sick because they thought Mahomes and these guys are going to knock them off. They're going to beat the Patriots. And they're seeing these SOBs celebrating again. And that's why they hated the overtime rule. They talked about it for 2 weeks, and nobody, not one sportscaster, mentioned the fact that the Saints lost the way that they did earlier in the same day. So that that AFC Championship game is always, I mean, it's ridiculous. And real quick, on Super Bowl 53, only one play run in the red zone the entire game, the Sony Michel touchdown. And the throw to Gronk, two of the best calls ever, when Scott Zolak goes, "This one's for posterity, that one's for NFL films." And then the big throw to Gronk and Tony Romo goes, "Oh, that one's, look at Giselle, she's so excited, she knows how big that one was for the family." And you see Giselle going crazy up there in the box. And, you know, those are two great calls right up there with Gino or Gil Santos and the Tuck Rule game, Brady's first run of the night, so.
I mean, it is a good point. We've touched on it once in this series, but Giselle was a great fan.
Yeah,
in the she was a big Tom supporter. And the curse was broken after the Seahawks Super Bowl. So you got to give props there. One other thing I want to Cove. That's enough. One thing I do want to mention about the Rams team, the fact that we held that team to 3 points earlier in the season. They played a game against the Kansas City Chiefs, the Rams did, where it was 51-49, and it was a shootout. And it was basically like, these two teams are going to be the teams moving forward, and older teams like the Patriots should just step aside because they can't keep up with what these two teams are able to do. And along the way, you go into Arrowhead Stadium, and you beat the Chiefs and change, like Matt said, change the overtime rules for the playoff format going forward. And then you hold that team that won that game, the Rams, the best offense that year, to 3 points mm-hmm. indoors.
Yep.
Just absolutely, absolutely insane. So that's pretty much all I have on that episode. They kind of just, I mean, after that Rams Super Bowl, Dave, it just kind of fizzles out and just goes into, then it just starts talking about like the, they just take the saddest clips of Brady that makes it seem like he's got this disjointed relationship with Bill, which if you've watched any interview with Brady in the last 6 months, he gets like choked up talking about Bill. So I think they just hand selected something that kept that villain storyline going, and then it just gets so crafty mm-hmm. with, you know, I was the one yeah. who kept this together so long. You also could have been the one who could have opened your checkbook and kept that quarterback here longer and stepped in. You said you were keeping an eye on Bill going into the Rams Super Bowl. You could have kept an eye on keeping Tom there. We'll definitely cover that in the follow-up episode. But that's all I have on episodes 1 through 10. Dave, I'll let you wrap us up here before we throw it to Cove.
I misspoke in the last episode where I said the You know, the Falcons drive I've seen so many times, and the first Super Bowl, the last drive for the field goal, the overtime drive in the Chiefs game was incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, third down conversions, Hogan was incredible, and then you know, Sony Michel ran the ball 30 times in that game. It was just so, you know, it was such a sneak attack. And Brady, up until that, I mean, you know, he threw two picks. I don't even think he threw a touchdown. And, you know, in that fourth quarter, in that overtime, he was vintage Brady, down the field, made the plays when you needed to. And then you had support. You had Burkhead. You had Michelle. You had these guys that, you know, were honestly, Burkhead was like struggling to get a contract. You know, as a free agent, obviously he was a great Patriot, but just came up clutch. It was it was kind of just a perfect storybook ending to you know, the Patriots dynasty, in terms of, you know, you had all these guys come up clutch, not a lot of big names, and it was incredible.
Cove mentioned how hated the Patriots were going into this Super Bowl, to the point where they feel like they need to change the rules around overtime, because we can't let a team like the Patriots, you know, take this game from the Chiefs. And I actually like the new overtime rules, but it was great that the Patriots kind of changed that. You talk about the Patriots as a team being hated. Let's talk a little bit, that just in this wrap up before the final episode, about how hated the fans were and how sick the country was of the fans. I mean, the best way I can paint a picture on how hated Patriots fans were and how spoiled Patriots fans were divisional round Saturday night before the game, Dave. We're down at a bar about 100 yards from where we're sitting right now, and Dave's brother John Nardella is hosting guys from California who are real life San Diego Charger fans, and they say to us before they leave the bar, you know what, you guys have had an amazing run, we respect it, but we really need this. And Ben Nardella stood up from his bar stool and said, F you, we need this. With a straight face, and then we went on to beat that San Diego Charger team and end their franchise. Oh,
annihilate them.
And ruin their franchise. So just had to mention that. Go, take us away.
Yeah, the one of my favorite NFL mic'd up clips ever is Joey Bosa. He comes around and goes, quit getting rid of the ball so fast, Tom. And Tom goes, yeah, I wouldn't be able to get rid of it so fast if you were all over my ass every play. And then they talk about the first drive, the Patriots get the ball, they go right down the field, and they score. And Bosa's sitting there on the bench, and I forget who he's talking to. He goes, I didn't miss one rush. He goes, I didn't lose one snap. Meaning that he beat his guy every time, and he couldn't get a hand on Brady, and it was just unbelievable. And that was, of course, the game where Brady goes after and he tells Tracy Wolfson, everybody thinks we suck, we're old, we can't win. And that's why all that run was just so special. And just like the 2018 Red Sox, and they beat every good team, you beat the Chargers, you beat the Chiefs, and you beat the Rams. And that's why that's such a crowning achievement. You beat the three best teams in the league.
Really well said. I mean, that's.
Oh, and the last thing we have heard, because we live in the era of recency bias, where, you know, whatever's the latest is always the greatest. There has been a lot of talk of Travis Kelce is better than Rob Gronkowski. Give me a break. Rob Gronkowski, when he was physically beaten and broken down because people attacked him on a football field the way little kids try to topple an adult, literally, like they take runs at an adult, like, you know, like picture like a six-year-old kid trying to wrestle down Big Dave Nardella. That's the way defenders in the NFL treated Rob Gronkowski. And when Gronk's body had betrayed him to the point where they could only use him strategically during games, okay, hey, going to keep him on ice, and we're just going to unleash him on the final couple drives of the Chiefs game. He went back and reverted to being basically the best blocking tight end of all time, if not right up there with, you know, Russ Francis, Bavaro, all those guys that Belichick loves. And that was really the secret to Gronk. So even when he wasn't out there putting up the fantasy football numbers. That season, he reverted back and he was an integral part of their ground game, which, you know, obviously got into the Super Bowl. So that's really the underrated, you know, I mean, we see all these great Gronk highlights. That's really the underrated story or really the underrated narrative about the greatest tight end of all time.
This episode's going to feel like it's getting cut short, but we're just going to touch on how we thought things ended and what we think they missed and some of our favorite things from the whole series in the next episode. So we'll cut it off right here. If you stuck with us through the recaps of episodes 1 through 10, thank you. And we hope to be doing another docuseries or type of a book report like this sometime soon. So thanks for tuning in to episodes 1 through 10 recaps, and we will be back with our final overall recap of the entire series in a little bit. Thanks, gang. Shut up.